Hi, everyone. Emma and I are continuing to take turns featuring the anti-racism resources that we are engaging with each month, because we believe that education leads to open hearts and free voices that are empowered to speak up and fight for change. Our hope is that you will find these resources useful for your education and that they will also help you to cross the threshold into doing active anti-racism work so that we can create an equitable world together. We love you all. Black Lives Matter. This month, I want to share with you a documentary on Netflix called Coded Bias. Coded Bias explores the fallout of MIT Media Lab researcher Joy Bulamwani's discovery that facial recognition does not see dark-skinned faces accurately, and her journey to push for the first ever legislation in the U.S. to govern against bias in the algorithms that impact us all. Modern society sits at the intersection of two crucial questions. What does it mean when artificial intelligence increasingly governs our liberties? What are the consequences of people AI is biased against? When MIT Media Lab researcher Joy Bulamwani discovers that many facial recognition technologies do not accurately detect darker-skinned faces or classify the faces of women, she delves into an investigation of widespread bias in algorithms. As it turns out, artificial intelligence is not neutral, and women are leading the charge to ensure our civil rights are protected. I highly recommend watching this documentary. The link to it is in the show notes.
Welcome to the
Full Heart,
Free Voice
podcast.
I'm Emma Veritas. I'm a writer and writing coach for women who want to start writing. And I'm a teacher for women who want to find their true selves again.
And I'm Caitlin Bosshart, a life coach for the multi-passionate at heart and wedding coach for couples planning non-traditional weddings. We read books that inspire you to live with a full heart
and a free voice. Hey everyone, before we get started with today's episode, we have a fun announcement for you. So Caitlin and I have recently opened up our affiliate shop. Our affiliate shop is a library of resources by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and you can find it at wildauthenticity.com/podcast shop. And when you go there, you'll find a list of links to Women Who Run With the Wolves, but also to all of Clarissa Pinkola Estes's audio classes that she's done through Sounds True. And when you buy these through these links, you support Clarissa Pinkola Estes, you support Sounds True, which is a very cool independent publisher, and you support our podcast because Sounds True has a very generous and amazing affiliate percentage that they give to us whenever you buy something. So it's this beautiful win-win-win, and it's also an opportunity for you to dive deeper into these educational resources. And so I just wanted to ask Caitlin today, Caitlin, what is one thing you have loved about listening to Clarissa Pinkola Estes's audio classes?
Well, I think it's, you know, when we are diving in so intimately with her work, and in a way it's like, I don't know about you, but there's been times I'm like, oh, it's Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Like there's a little bit of this, like, I don't know, she's like ethereal, I think in some ways in my mind and in this, but you know, there was something that was so nice is, you know, when I listen to her audios, I get to hear her voice and I get, there's like a sense of her heart and her intention that comes through in a way that, you know, now that I've listened to her voice and how she tells these stories, when I'm reading, I hear like her tone and how she kind of explains things. And it gives me a different level of understanding, I think, of the way that she is expressing her ideas and her thoughts and her wisdom. And so that's been one of the coolest things, that it's just like another level of kind of getting to know this author that we are engaging with so intimately and learning from.
And there's a class I want to tell you about today called The Power of the Crone. Entering the terrain of wisdom occurs at any age. We sometimes step, sometimes stumble, and other times are pulled into the territory of the crone, when the need for a deeper, larger understanding of our most meaningful paths in life can no longer be denied, and when the gifts that are hidden in our challenges must be brought forth. On The Power of the Crone, Dr. Estes presents Volume 2 of The Dangerous Old Woman, with 6 sessions of original stories, psychological commentary, and blessings. We invite you to go to wildauthenticity.com/podcast shop and click on our special link to purchase this class. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Part 2 of our book club episode, where we are talking about Chapter 14 of Woman Who Roam with the Wolves, La Selva Subterranea, Initiation in the Underground Forest. And if you haven't listened to Part 1 yet, we do invite you to do that, because in Part 1, I have a full synopsis of the chapter, of what we're talking about, of the story, The Handless Maiden, that this chapter is all about. But in Part 2, I'm not going to include all that information. So we do invite you to go to the previous episode and listen to Part 1 so that you can be caught up with where we're at now. And in the last episode, we talked about stages 1 through 3 of this initiation in the underground forest. And in this episode, we're talking about phases 4 through 7. And Caitlin and I are just going to continue taking turns telling stories about each of the phases, offering life school suggestions for each one, and also picking out a quote for each one. So hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Emma.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have a bit of a cold. So just to let our listeners know, I'm going to be trying to silence all of the beautiful sniffling and all the wonderful things happening in my voice for recording. But otherwise, I'm pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I feel like almost in some ways this may sort of play into these phases of where sometimes we have hard things going on and we continue on our journey anyway.
That's right. It's like, yeah, I think this will come through for sure in some of the things we talk about.
All right. So picking up where we left off, I told a story for stage 3. And so now it is your turn, Emma, to share a story that fits with the theme of the fourth stage, which is finding love in the underworld. And so I would love to hear for you, what life experiences did this phase and stage bring up for you?
So this stage was really interesting. It was really, you know, she talks about finding love in the underworld, but there is so much that goes into it. As I was rereading this morning, she was talking about, you know, the handless maiden eats the pear and the king is watching her. And there are all these casts of characters and things going into this stage of this moment where the king runs to the handless maiden and loves her and wants to marry her. So for me, it felt like, wow, this is kind of a complex, like encompassing stage where you can pick out probably lots of different things that have happened in your life or in my life that would match the stuff going on in this whole orchard, like fruit tree, magical, mystical time. But what it mostly made me think about was, you know, like the last time in stage 2, I was telling the story about basically stopping drinking, becoming sober, and how that was my initiation into like the underworld of healing and growth and personal development and all of that. And what this stage was drawing me to was actually a time, I'd say about 3 years into my recovery. So during those 3 years, you know, I was very focused on
For sure, healing and personal development, but probably more on just getting my life together, on like paying the bills, on showing up to work, doing a great job at what I did, at just kind of being a member of my community. Like, I was really focused on things that were probably more like external to me as part of my healing journey of just feeling like confident and competent, a member of society. But what happened around 3 years in was I actually ended up hitting another bottom. And this bottom was more about my soul life. It was more about like being in a career that was so draining and so like difficult emotionally to show up to because it was so boring for me. Like, I was so unhappy and unfulfilled in the work I was doing. I was good at it. Like, I felt great showing up to work and feeling like an expert and people could turn to me and I had my assignments done on time. Like, I was good at my job. And so all of that stuff felt good. But fundamentally at the core of the thing that I was doing, that felt really unfulfilling for me. And so I started to seek different things. Like, I started to read The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. I started to read Martha Beck articles in O Magazine. And from there, I picked up Finding Your Own North Star by Martha Beck. And I know I've told this story before, but this is kind of my ultimate moment of choosing myself, which I think this is what this is about. Like, she talks about in the chapter, in the stage, that like the king is this part of you that rushes to, you know, your soul self, your mystical self, and loves you, right? It's like you loving yourself, like that kind of mystical union. So I remember one day doing the exercises and Finding Your Own North Star. So that's the kind of book Finding Your Own North Star is. There's a ton of like witty, great, good information, but there's also exercises, and the power of that book is in actually doing it. And so I was doing one of the exercises, and it was to basically understand like when your essential self, or you might also call that your wild self that we've been talking about in Woman Who Run with the Wolves, when that deeper, true part of you is saying no to something in your life, and how to know when that part of you is saying yes to something in your life. And I think this is such a cool exercise because it's just a basic, like, get to know yourself, like get to know when it is that you really want something and when it is that you really don't want something, and trying to get like honest and clear about that from an intuitive, deeper, like honoring the self kind of place. And in doing that exercise, I filled out a bunch of questions. It's this kind of cool, like, questionnaire kind of exercise if you end up doing it. And basically, when my essential self was saying no, how that felt was how I felt all the time in my life. So even though I was like in recovery, even though I was on the right path, there were still some big things that my true self was saying no to, and I had been ignoring that. And then when I did the part to understand how and when my essential self says yes, I kind of went into this like deep state. This is where it becomes kind of mystical, I think. But like, I felt it, right? I felt like the feeling of my essential self saying yes. And it felt like, I don't know, like golden nectar flowing down my spine. It was probably like my first spiritual experience. And it felt so good. And I was like, oh yeah, this is the feeling of when myself is happy. This is the feeling of when I'm being authentic. This is the feeling of a life that I want to be living. And after doing that exercise, like in that moment, I just made this decision, like, this is how I want to feel. This is the feeling I'm chasing in my life. Like, I don't want to feel the way how I've been feeling anymore. Like, I want to feel like this. I want to feel like the way how I would feel if my essential self was saying yes to my life.
And I made this like just moment flash decision. And to me, it reminds me so much of the king, like running out to the queen and just saying, I need to marry you. You know, like I love you. I want to be together. Like for me, that was that moment of like, I want to be married to this feeling inside myself of me being truly fulfilled and happy. And at that point, it was just stuff I was imagining. It's like imagining a life that could be good. I was like, I don't want it to just be imaginary. I want it to be real. I want to be united to this feeling. So yeah, so that's my big story of choosing myself, I think, because after that, and we'll get into that later in the episode, but it's like after that, that the ball started rolling and things did start changing in my life.
I think that that is such a good example, especially because you're starting with there's these multiple like layers of this initiation in some ways. And I know there's all these different stages, but they do roll into one another, obviously. There's like they sort of line up. And so there's like that first initiation of quitting the drinking. And so that was one way that you were pulled into the underworld and you like accessed that wisdom. And then you went through the cycle again and it was like almost you got deeper and more connected to the soul self and more connected to your wisdom in the process. Like that's what I feel like I'm hearing. Am I getting that correctly?
Yes. Yes. I think that's it, that I needed more. Like I needed more than to be competent at my life, you know, in my life. Like I didn't realize I needed more than that because it felt so good to just be good at stuff. You know, after like drinking, you know, it's like I was out all night. I was hungover all the time. I was dropping the ball on my life. Like I don't know, like I would walk around with just untended stuff in my life all the time. Like I lived in New England and I didn't really have a winter coat, right? Like that's how things were. Like I was like, I don't know. I'll wear a bunch of sweaters, I guess. Like I didn't have a good winter coat in an environment that really would be amazing to have a good winter coat in. And so for me, those things did need to happen first. I did need to learn how to just like pay a bill, get a coat, you know, all those simple things. But then after a while, that stuff just was no longer enough and I needed more, which I was surprised by actually, because I thought it should be enough. But yeah, it wasn't. I needed to go even deeper, like you're saying, even deeper into discovering and connecting to my soul, basically.
And what that reminds me of is there's that part where she talks about how the psyche seeds the self with challenges so that it drives us back down from like the topside world to the underside world. And I think that's the part that can be like perplexing. Because like you're saying, like, I didn't think I needed anymore. But then that like sort of divine discontent comes up. And it's like, oh, no, there's more. There's more for us to teach you or for your soul to teach you is what was coming up for me, like hearing what you're saying and reading this chapter.
Right. There's more. And also it's okay to want that. Yes. I think I had this idea that like it wasn't a worthy pursuit. Like I was being selfish. Why should I quit this job? I was good at my job. I was on a career trajectory. You know, I was climbing up the ladder of my career. There were for sure promotions and raises coming in the future. And so it felt really kind of strange to say no to that because I really thought like, this is the thing, right? This is the thing that should be good, that should make you happy. That should feel like success and like I did it. And in a lot of ways, it did satisfy a big part of me, but it really wasn't, you know, it wasn't right for me.
And so is there a particular quote that really spoke to you through this chapter or this section of the chapter, I should say?
I like this part where she's talking about the king choosing the handless maiden. And she says, he recognizes her as his own, not in spite of her handless, wildish, wandering state, but because of it. The theme of being so without and yet so sustained continues.
even though we wander about in an unwashed, forlorn, semi-blinded, and handless state, a great force from the self can love us and hold us to its heart.
And I love that because I think in a lot of ways, like me kind of thinking that I should be happy working with data, like I was a data manager, like thinking about that now, it's like kind of obvious that that wouldn't have been satisfying for me. But like I didn't know, right? And I do think there was a sense of wandering, kind of handless, and like, maybe this is the right thing. Maybe this is the path. And I love that even though I could be so kind of pointing myself in a trajectory that was kind of direct opposite to my true self, like there was still a part of me that could be called forth and that could be loved and that I could seek, like that was still there.
I love that. And so for our listeners, is there like a particular question or a couple of questions that you think would be really helpful to help them really reflect on this section in particular?
Well, I think one great question is, what are you saying yes to in your life that your true self would really rather be saying no to? I think it's always about, like, we're always saying yes to something, you know, like whatever we're doing with our time, it's like we're saying yes to that thing. And I know sometimes like our time can't always be our own. You know, there's a lot going on in life. Everyone's living different lives, has different responsibilities. But even if there's one thing to think about that, like actually this thing is actually optional and my true self would rather say no to this optional thing. I think that's a good question or a good thing to think about. To start to like love and seek the self is to really understand what the self wants, even in a small way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It completely makes sense. And the question that I was thinking about is, I think, slightly different, but there's a similarity to it. When I was reading this chapter, I was thinking a lot about, you know, how she's, this is the part of the story where she's, you know, crossing through the moat. And so it's kind of like the moat kind of represents like the underworld and death. And so it's like this process of crossing through that while still remaining alive and the cycles of life and death and sort of embracing that whole process. And what was coming up for me through this too is kind of like when you're saying like, what are you saying yes to? But it's also like, what maybe needs to, what needs to like be initiated in this like life, death, life cycle? Like what needs to maybe die or, you know, be put to rest in some way in your life so that that new life can come up or like so that you can really create and connect with this deep like self love of the soul self through that.
Yes.
And then the other question that kind of popped up for me too is, you know, during times of darkness and times that are challenging, you know, what is the inner wisdom that wants to come through? Similar to how, you know, for you, Emma, that wisdom of really connecting to your body, wisdom was coming through. And so like for all of us, I do think it in those dark times, if we listen, a lot of times there is like so much wisdom that wants to pop up. So that would be my question.
Yeah, I love that. I actually had that, you know, because we're completing yesterday, Mercury retrograde ended. And I love the wisdom around Mercury retrograde, where they say it can be a time to like redo, reassess, like reconsider like what's going on. So one way to approach a Mercury retrograde time where, you know, people tend to feel like, oh, everything's just going to be a mess astrologically, like communications go awry, everything stops functioning. But one approach to that is to say, well, what is it that's not working during this time? And then to really ask yourself, like, if you were going to really redo this, how would you do it differently? If you were going to like reconsider this aspect of your life, what would need to change? And I like that. It like goes along with what you were just saying of really like even when there's a challenge, to take a moment and ask yourself, what can be done differently here? What needs to change? And take that opportunity and the challenge.
Yeah, I love that. And I haven't heard that perspective on Mercury in retrograde, and I really, really appreciate it. So thank you for that wisdom.
Yeah, I had to do a lot of that this Mercury retrograde, like more than ever. And I'm not happy about it, but fine.
You're happy, but you are resilient and you push through.
Lots of reassessing. Anyway.
That actually leads us perfectly into the fifth stage, which is the harrowing of the soul. So this is the part of the Handless Maiden where the king has actually left to go off on a faraway journey, and the Handless Maiden is actually left alone with the queen. And this is the time where she is pregnant and then is, you know, has given birth to her child. And then the queen sends a message to the king that the child has been born. But on the way, the messenger carrying this good news falls asleep. The devil comes upon him, changes the message, and says that the queen has actually given birth to a half child, half dog. That message gets to the king. Of course, he's surprised by this news, sends back a, you know, compassionate message. Again, the messenger falls asleep. The devil changes the message and says to, you know, harm the queen or kill the queen. And, you know, there's this whole back and forth of where this part of the psyche is not, of the queen, the soul self is not as protected. And so there's this struggle of these messages getting changed. And so the soul is having to go through this process of really integrating this knowledge, even without the protection of that, the king part of the psyche. So what this phase brought up for me, and I have a hard time telling a story without it sort of starting at the earlier phases a little bit. As we all know, I'm not the best with keeping anything in super nice and tidy boxes. But what this really makes me think about is, you know, times when, you know, I've gone through that, you know, gone into the underworld, have gone through a challenging time. So similar to the story that you were telling, Emma, where it's like I was having, you know, feeling this divine discontent in my life, which then led to me reconnecting or connecting deeper to a part of my soul and making a decision from that place. And so what that brought up for me, it really made me think about, is when I was working at the domestic violence safe house, was not in a good place. It was not a nurturing environment for me, and felt this intuitive tug to join the life coach training program. And for me, it was at that time I was learning so much about myself. I was really connecting to my soul self. I was realizing, you know, the type of life that I wanted to create. I was, you know, like they talk about in this part, you know, pregnant with ideas, kind of like where I'm full of yourself. It's this time where all these ideas and visions for your life are coming up. And it's this really beautiful time, and yet it's vulnerable. And when you have to, you know, start to, you know, move out of that space a little bit, so like moving out of and leaving the life coach training program, you know, initially it's like you're just so excited about everything that you're going to create and all the ideas and what's possible for your life. And then there's all this doubt that starts to come up. And it's like, that's where like the devil comes in. And not only as, you know, an entrepreneur, but also as a multi-passionate person, because I'm, you know, coming up with ideas on a constant basis, just like Emma does, just like all of you do, you know, that experience of there's just all these ideas coming up all the time. And how she talks about how, you know, when something, you know, beautiful, like when the queen gives birth to the child, like when we give birth, or when we like bring an idea that's beautiful into the world, also something ugly follows. And that's that self-doubt. And that's the, this is a beautiful idea. And then this is a horrible idea. like this is the thing that like my clients and the people that I'm meant to serve like need. And then the next thing is like, oh my gosh, they would never like, they would think this is the worst idea ever. You know, it's like, you go back and forth and back and forth, or you paint a beautiful painting and you're just so excited to share it. And then the next moment you're like, oh my gosh, I want to hide it from the world. No one should ever see this. I should burn it. It's that type of stuff that comes up. And what I have found for myself has that, you know, where she is sharing how, you know, the mistake that we make is forgetting about the devil over and over and over again. And what I have, and certainly not perfectly, but I've gotten so much better at just expecting the devil to show up, expecting that those doubts are going to be part of the process, and continuing to move forward anyway, to still put my work out to the world, still share what I have to do. The other part of this, though, you know, that I think is really important is, you know, this is also the part where, you know, you're reconnecting, that vulnerable part of you is reconnecting with the wild woman. And the wild woman, which is the mother of the king, sends the queen away to the forest or to the woods where she's protected. And this is the time where, you know, sometimes when we do have these new ideas and we are vulnerable, sometimes we have to not hide, but veil it. We have to protect our ideas until it's to a point where it's, you know, we've gained a little bit more confidence. We've kind of built ourselves up that we can, you know, withstand the ups and downs, the self-doubt that comes up, and then the confidence and the self-doubt, and then the confidence that comes up. You know, and like, and one of the things that I really, really resonated with, and I think just comes in so much to what I do for myself, and then is such a huge part of coaching, is that the antidote to that doubt and those limiting beliefs is truly consciousness, to like name the limiting beliefs, to name the things that are holding us back and keeping us small and making us feel like our ideas, you know, aren't worth anything. If we name those, we start to take the power away from them. And that was something that I love that she specifically brought that in. It's like shining the light on it takes the power away.
So I'm actually curious, because do you remember in life coach training that there was this idea that there were like our top 10 self-doubts or our top 10 limiting beliefs, like the things that our brain brings up over and over and over again. And we each probably just have like a different list, a different top 10 list of things. And that was part of the becoming aware of this thing, right? Like becoming aware of, oh, I'm singing one of my top 10 tunes again. Yep. Here's why I can't do it. And I'm curious, just to bring this down to like, for our listeners, to this practical way, if you would be up for sharing like one of your top 10 self-doubts.
Yes. And so actually, this is something that's kind of vulnerable, because it's something that has actually come to light more recently for me as being a core belief that was hiding in all these different ways. And it's that if I am my biggest, brightest self, I will make other people feel bad.
Good one. That's, yeah, a good top 10 tune.
Yes. And, you know, again, a vulnerable share, I've been doing lots of EMDR around this belief and this thought, and it's amazing the threads and the tentacles it has in so many relationships and times in my life that I didn't even realize came back to that core belief. And so sometimes like we identify these maybe like higher level beliefs, like they're a little bit more on the surface. But then again, it's sometimes like I've had this initiation into the underground of like where I'm like, okay, I'm like going through some stuff, I'm getting extra support, and we're diving deeper. We're like, okay, there's other layers under here. There's other pieces that my soul self was like, you need to know that this is here, yes. that this is existing for you, so that we can shine the light on it and see that it's not actually true. And in fact, it's like I have more evidence to show that it is completely false. Yeah, so that is a big one. That has been the big one for me that I'm currently working to untie.
That's amazing. And so the story is saying that, you know, this devil character is like interrupting the good news, right? So it's like, so what I'm imagining playing out is that you have some good news. You're like, hey, I have this idea. I'm going to tell people about it. Like I have this good news to share. But then like this thought comes in and disrupts it. And then things change a little. And you like, for me, it happens like that where I don't necessarily share the way I would have. Like the message does actually change. Like sometimes if I'm dealing with something like that, I might literally say different words than I would have if I didn't have that thought going on in the background. Does that happen for you?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's there's a lot of downplaying that can happen. Mm-hmm. Or when I'll, you know, create this like new offer and I'm so excited about it and I want to share it with everyone. And then that doubt comes in and that voice comes in. And so like I start saying it a little bit quieter and I don't, you know. Yeah. And so that's a really common thing. We all experience that, how, you know, how it changes for us. Or, you know, you have someone you know, makes like pretty like a benign comment, but like kind of pokes at those sore spots. And
yes.
then all of a sudden it becomes this all encompassing, you know, like takes over. And all of a sudden, like this thing that I was like ready to put out into the world, I will hide it away, you know? And so it's a hard process, but what I do come back to, and I think what also is really helpful is coming back to like the bigger why behind why I'm doing something. So when I think about, you know, like my coaching program, and when I'm, you know, wanting to share that good news of like, this is a way that I can help people who are multi-passionate bring their ideas in the world, create lives that really are fulfilling to them. I have to come back to that. It's like, it's not really actually about, at least for me in that particular example, like, oh, this isn't really actually about me. Like this is about who I'm helping and who I feel like I'm meant to serve in the world and the purpose that my work has and how that's going to play out. But you know, and it's like, and you know, like I shared in our last episode about our new podcast merchandise, I have, as excited as I am for you all to go check out all like our podcast art on t-shirts and mugs and stuff, I'm really excited about. I mean, there has also been this fear of like, nobody wants this. Nobody's going to like this. Like, why would I ever decide to put my art for our podcast on a t-shirt? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's just, it's so silly. And not that means that everybody is going to want it, but somebody might. And that doesn't really matter. Like the thing is, like, I'm excited about it and trying to stay in that space and not let those limiting beliefs and those self-doubts come in and stop me from doing something that actually I feel like is supposed to be in the world.
So do you have a quote from this section that you would love to share that ties into your story and all the wonderful things you just told us?
I do. So the quote is, when there is too much predator and not enough wild soul, the economic, social, emotional, and religious structures of culture gradually begin to distort the most soulful resources, both in spirit and in the outer world. Natural cycles are starved into unnatural shapes, lacerated with unwise uses, or else put to death. The value of what is wild and visionary is denigrated. The dark speculations are made about how dangerous the instinctual nature really is, thus stripped of authentic sanctity and meaning, and destructive and painful means and methods are rationalized as superior. So for me, you know, especially as someone who has been trying to, you know, connect to my soul purpose, and as someone who doesn't feel like a lot of the structures and the social expectations really feel authentic to me, it is a struggle to try to balance the social expectations that we all are subject to on a constant basis, all these messages, and to still try to hear the soul self message, even in the distortion. It's like, how do I still hear the seed of truth in that and block out all the rest? And that's the challenge. And I feel like this is the piece that I, you know, am experiencing all the time at, you know, as someone who's bringing lots of ideas and doing lots of things in the world. This is my work. This is a big piece of my work.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea of like it is a challenge to listen to the soul, especially when things are harder, especially when the mind is telling us lots of these like self-doubt thoughts and everything. So what would you tell our listeners? Like, is there a question they could ask? Is there something they could do? Like, what have you learned about listening to your soul? And what helps you do that?
Yeah, so I'll be using some of Dr. Estes's words here because I think that it's really helpful. But I think the question is, you know, if you've lost your mission, your oomph, if you're feeling confused, slightly off, to look for the devil. So, you know, where is it showing up? And really what the devil is like, what are the limiting beliefs? Or where is the fear coming up? Where is the nagging, you know, concern about self-judgment, real or imagined, self-judgment or judgment from others showing up? So again, it's like if you're feeling like all of a sudden, like the shine has been taken out of your idea, if you're feeling dulled down, there's something in that to explore for you that isn't the true soul message. And how do you clear that away?
Yes, I like that suggestion. You know, one thing that really, really helps me, especially when I can't do it. Like, I know, like I'm being triggered or something is going on. I just cannot get to that place of knowing the truth. Like, I'll be in places where I know what I'm thinking isn't true, but I don't know what the truth is. For me, I love pulling oracle cards at that time. Like, it's such a nice practice, and I'll shuffle the deck and I'll ask just like, what truth do I need to see? And I'll pull a card, and that kind of just disrupts the flow of, or like the endless cycle of my own thoughts. So even if the card itself isn't exactly the truth yet, like it brings in some new idea, some new thing, so that I can start thinking about different things. Like, it pulls me out of that endless cycle and endless loop of thinking. So for me, I found like oracle cards just be really, really useful for those times.
I love that example, and I've done the same thing, that there have been times I'm like, I just don't know how to see my way through this. Sometimes it's oracle cards, but I've also used runes and the I Ching. And so sometimes like I will feel called to one modality or the other. So just some other ideas, if these resonate with you, just to explore and see what wisdom wants to come through.
Yeah. You could even use Woman Who Run With the Wolves. Like, sometimes I'll do that and I'll just open up to a random page and plop my finger down and think like, okay, Clarissa Pinkola-Estes, what do you have to tell me about this? Like, that can be also really fun and useful just to like, just get any other idea in there other than your own thinking.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is there a question that you would also pose?
I guess my question is always just, well, like, I'll turn to my soul and ask my soul to show me the truth. So when I'm stuck in a place and I can't figure it out, I'm suffering and in pain, that's often what I do. Like, I'll just say, okay, soul, like, I don't know. I can't figure this one out. Can you please show me the truth And then I like to just surrender it and say, well, this is up to my soul now. And usually, like in a day or two, three, 4 days, like something will come to me. But that's how I tend to just let the problem drop and say, you know what, I just honestly don't know. And whatever, my soul self has to take charge of this one because I don't know. And I can't do anything. Like, you know, you can't do anything about that. So the soul will show you in its own time, kind of thing. So that's one way that I just let it go, is I ask, well, what is the truth? And I just ask my soul that to show me.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, so now it's time for our special segment when Caitlin and I let you all know some of the things we have going on. If you want to hang out with us, get coached by us, participate in our online courses, all the different fun things Caitlin and I do. So Caitlin, what do you have going on? What have you been up to?
So the first thing I want to share actually is that I was a guest on another podcast. And so it's really, really fun podcast. It's called Retail Your Story, as in R-E-T-A-I-L. And it's all about stories that people, and interviews around the things that we bring into our lives and really like the meaning and connection that we have to them. And so it's all about, you know, more than, you know, is it really more than just stuff? You know, sometimes we really have these items that are truly, truly special to us. And so I tell the story about my great-grandmother's necklace, which I wore on my wedding day, and how it really ultimately inspired a lot of my path actually in life as a wedding coach. And so I will leave it there as a little teaser. But if you are interested in checking that out, you can go to retailyourstorypodcast.com. And the podcast title is The Necklace. So I really would love to hear your thoughts on it. If you are interested in wedding coaching at all, it gives you, we talk so much about my philosophy about wedding coaching and things like that. So anyway, it was really fun to be part of another podcast. She has a different style than us, which is really, really fun and creative. So I think you'll enjoy it. And then I am starting to book some of my activation sessions. So I just have a couple of spots for July. So if you are a multi-passionate creative and you're wanting to really hone your creative process, if you really want to understand what your natural tendencies are so that you can make sure that when you're diving into a project, or if you're feeling stuck, especially, you know, where are you working against your natural tendencies and how do you truly honor who you are? And I love these sessions. I did one yesterday and it's so amazing to see all these light bulbs going off for people, all these ways that they thought, oh my gosh, I thought that this was something that was wrong with me. And in fact, it's actually a part of myself that I need to embrace. And it's actually the key to unlock my own creative process. So if you're interested in signing up for that, you can go to my website, caitlinbosshart.com/activation session. And I also currently have a couple of spots in my one-on-one multi-passionate creative coaching program. If you're at a point where you have a big project that you are really just ready to bring into the world, but you need support, maybe some of those limiting beliefs that we talked about in the last segment are coming up, and the idea is ready to be in the world, but you want to make sure that you continue to stay with that, the excitement of it, and not let those limiting beliefs, not let that devil come in and really interrupt you. That is so much of what this intimate container is about, is really helping you bring your amazing ideas into the world and help you create a life that is supportive to you. And of course, wedding coaching, which, if you're engaged and you're ready to start really thinking about creating a truly meaningful ceremony for your wedding and really want to infuse who you are as a couple into it. If the traditional script of weddings doesn't quite resonate with you, I would absolutely love to connect with you and see if working together is a good fit on that. So those are the big things. Of course, check out the podcast shop as well. Check out our merchandise. I'm, tweaking that here and there as we go. And I think that's all the main things anyway that I want to share with you. And so let's then switch over to you, Emma. What do you have in the works or, you know, continuing on?
I was super inspired by your multi-passionate PSAs on Instagram. It looked really fun. And so I decided to start doing something similar where I pop on Instagram just for about 3 minutes of inspiration. I call it creativity chat. And it's been really, really fun because it's totally unscripted. And I just talk about like what's on my mind that day, like what I've been thinking about creativity, what has been inspiring me, what things I've been working through. And I really love doing them. I did one on like the paradox recently of what it feels like to be a very private person, but also want to show up online and share and inspire and help and teach people online. Like how weird that can be, right? When you're like, I'm a private introvert, but I also want to help people in this particular way on the internet. So that's been really fun. So you can come to my Instagram. It's at Wild Authenticity there to watch any of those videos if you're just needing a little bit of inspiration. And then, of course, Courageous Bloggers Society is going so well. We've had a few new members recently, and it's just really exciting. Courageous Bloggers Society, if you don't know, that's my membership program for folks who want to inspire, teach, and help others through writing online. So it's through a blog, through your social media, through whatever it is that you want to do, but you want to do it through writing on the internet. And writing on the internet might just be fundamentally intimidating for you. It can be really scary to like show up and show your vulnerable self online. And so that's the stuff we're working with. We're talking about writing skills. We're talking about courage and confidence and connecting to the self. We're talking about sharing your message and getting clear on what it is you have to say. So there's just so much good stuff going on in there. And I would encourage you to sign up for a 7-day free trial at wildauthenticity.com/courageousbloggerssociety. And the last thing I wanted to tell you about is that I am still actually doing some one-on-one coaching. So if you're somebody who wants to write something that is specifically something to inspire, help, and teach others, either a book or a blog, you could absolutely sign up for a free consultation and see if working together would be a good fit. What I tend to do in our sessions, they tend to be really good for people who need to externally process. My one-on-one clients really need a space to just talk it out. Like they need a safe space to just say everything, to just put it out there so that they can figure out what they're doing, why they're doing it, how it's all going to come together. And then what I do is I tend to ask questions or offer tools or help you work through what Caitlin and I were just talking about, the self-doubts and the fears and the things that are coming up. So if that sounds like you, if you are someone who learns through talking things out, then my coaching sessions would probably be a really good fit for you. And the link to schedule a free consultation with me is in the show notes.
Okay, so diving back into the sixth stage, which is the realm of the wild woman. So this is the part where the queen is in the woods. She has been sent away by the king's mother, and she's in this very nurturing environment. And it's the part where slowly but surely, she begins to grow her hands back. And what Dr. Estes says is even though this is a relatively short part of the chapter, it's actually 7 years that she is in this space. So it talks about how, you know, the significance of the number 7 and how sometimes there are phases and times in our lives and lessons that are coming through that actually take a very, very long time, and that things actually happen often in these 7-year cycles. So I know that for you, Emma, this is actually, you are at a 7-year mark in your life. And so I'd love to know kind of like what your reflections are on this time.
Yeah, so I just turned 42. So in like a couple weeks ago. So I am now finishing this cycle that she says is from age 35 to 42, where she says it's the age of the seeker, learning to mother self and seeking the self. And I really enjoyed this whole section that she talked about, like this idea that, like the idea of looking back over 7 years of your life to see what were these lessons that I learned. I think this is such a cool practice, which I've done before, learned about before, but seeing it here, like written out in this kind of beautiful poetic way that she has to talk about it, was really interesting to me to think about, like, what is going on beneath the surface? Like, what has the wild self been doing over these past 7 years? And so it's interesting. So when I look at these past 7 years, you know, if we pick up where I left off with me reading Finding Your Own North Star, it was about a year after that, in April of 2014, where I actually like joined you, Caitlin, and our life coach training. Caitlin and I were in the same class. And that was when I made the first true shift. So like I kept working at my job, even though I knew it wasn't right for me while I was transitioning. But I was looking for like what would work for me. So I was doing a ton of research on schools and different styles of education and training that I could do for my next career. And so it was about 7 years ago that we actually started life coach training. And so when I look at that moment to today through this lens of it being the age of the seeker, learning to mother myself and seeking myself, I really can see, especially seeking the self, as like the major theme of my life over these past 7 years. Because, you know, when I graduated from life coach training, I still didn't really know what my dream career would be. And I certainly had no idea that it would take so long to figure it out. Like I guess I thought I would graduate and then be a life coach, and then I would have my dream career. That would be it. But it turns out, like being an entrepreneur, there was a huge learning curve there. There was a huge learning curve with specifically what I wanted to do with my work as a coach. And so I was trying tons of different things over these past few years. I was learning about like marketing a business and running a business. I was learning about how to be a coach, how to, you know, interact with people in a session. I was running group programs. I was just doing so many different things. And I think fundamentally my question was always, well, what does my soul want to do? So I was trying out lots of different like business models and business offerings. But the idea behind that trial was that I was seeking myself and wondering, well, did I like that? Was that fun? Do I want to do it again? And I was checking in with my body, always looking at that compass of like, yes or no. Like, do I really want to do this next idea? Like you were talking about, Caitlin, having all the ideas. Like, what did I really want to do it? I would always be checking in with my body compass, with my yes, no indicator for my soul self or essential self. I'm just going through this huge years long process of that. And through all of that, I claimed myself, right? Like it was, okay, at some point, I finally just realized and knew that I was a writer and I wanted to claim that word for me. And then I knew that this is what I wanted to help other people do. Because before becoming a writing coach, I tried helping people with their career because that was such a big thing for me. Or I helped people, you know, figure out how to be like a magical healer because that was such a big thing for me too. Like claiming my magical side. And is that what I wanted to help people do? But really for me, it's all about like self-expression. And this is what I've learned fundamentally through these 7 years is that if I look back over the course of my whole life, what's been the most important thing to me has been self-expression and fighting for authentic self-expression in myself. Like, I remember being in middle school and just being in high school too, and just feeling like a warrior of like, I'm going to wear the clothes I want to wear. Like, I'm not going to dress like everyone else. You know, I'm going to be me with my clothes. I'm going to write this like poetry in this book, or I'm going to, like, I was writing stories. I was doing a lot of writing. And when I look back, I can see that like being authentic has been a huge part of my life and the importance of that. And not just being authentic, but having my outsides expressed authentically, you know? So I can really see all of this in there, that in these past 7 years, it was like the fruition of what I was fighting for in middle school, like seeking myself and learning to express myself authentically. And now that's what I teach people. So now I'm entering the age of the early crone and finding the far encampment and giving courage to others. And I loved reading that, giving courage to others, because that's my business. It's Courageous Blogger Society. It's like I've done all this work to gain this courage and confidence to be myself out there in the world. And now, like, in my early cronedom, which I freaking love, that idea and that word, now it's like, yeah, I'm going to give courage to other folks who are expressing themselves authentically and learning how to do it.
The synchronicity of this is so awesome to me in so many ways. And it is exactly what you do. And it's what I think is amazing. And what I'm hearing, and tell me where I'm wrong, ultimately, all the things that you've gone through have led you to this moment. And that, you know, if part of your journey, even though in some ways, you know, I don't know if, you know, were there moments where you maybe felt like impatient with the process?
Yeah. You know what I got really impatient with was that I was constantly wanting to change things.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had a story, or felt like when I had a business, I started coaching, that I would do that thing and I would never ever want it to change. Like, that would be the thing I was doing. So each time I changed it, I think what would happen would be like, I would change my business to a new niche, or I'd put out a new signature offer. And each time my soul was totally aligned to that thing. Like, it was truly what my essential self was saying yes to. Like, this is the next thing. And in my mind, I would think, not this is the next thing, but this is the thing, right? And what was actually happening was that over and over and over again, my soul was wanting to learn lessons, I think. Like, okay, like, I did this group program. It wasn't exactly right. It's actually not the thing that I want to do forever. It was just the thing that I wanted to do once. And that I was very impatient with, because I felt that my business would never get traction. It was never going to work. I was never going to make money doing this thing. I was never going to have my dream career, blah, 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 blah. So that was mostly my impatience, was I just wanted to land on something that I could not have to change.
Well, and I think that's the interesting thing, is I think we want, at least, I'm just going to speak for myself. Like, I find myself wanting to just like arrive somewhere.
Yes.
In a way. And then obviously also not, but there's sometimes it's like, when am I going to get there? You know, wherever there is. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing, and like, as you were talking, the image is like, as you're like, and then I did this, and then I did this. I was like imagining like your little baby hands, and then becoming little girl hands. Aww. And then you're, you know, like growing. It's like the previous evolution, you know, like the previous like version of yourself is like still there. All the things you did have built upon and informed the next evolution of who you are. And it just seems like everything that you went through, even though it took longer than you needed, it all feels so necessary to me as you're explaining it, to be in this moment where you are and doing this work that is the current evolution. And it will probably shift and change in ways, maybe less, you know, and at times, like, but that's the visual that I was having. And I think it's such a beautiful example of this part of the story.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so true. I love the idea of my little baby hands, like, like a life coach. I'm a life coach now with my baby hands, like trying to just like she says here, with your baby hands, you mimic what other people do. That was totally what I did. I like learned through copying. Like, oh, okay, this is what those people do, so this is what I'll do. And I think that a lot of new entrepreneurs do that because it's such a new world for certainly someone like me, who's a solopreneur and had never been a business owner before. It's like you learn through kind of copying, but then you grow your hands and you can become more confident. And now, like, I can still learn, but I don't need to copy anymore. Like, this is my craft. Writing is my craft, but also inspiring, teaching, helping others to write is my craft. And, you know, one really good example of how everything feeds in is, so a few years ago, I got an idea for like a children's novel I wanted to write, because one of my life dreams, I don't know if it's still a life dream, but previously it had been my life dream to just publish a children's novel, because I love fairy tales and children's books, and they impacted my life so much growing up as a reader, as a little kid reader. And so I'd spent a lot of time with that novel, and I wrote 3 different drafts of it, like full drafts beginning to end. And I learned a lot about like plot theory, about how to tell a story, how to write a story, about all the different things that go into a story. And then I don't know what's going to happen with that novel. Like, it's just kind of sitting there now. And I'm like, what was that? Like, I spent like years deeply learning about storytelling and writing and crafting a fictional story and working on this one thing. And now I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm ending this 7-year cycle. I'm not sure, like, does that want to come with me into the next 7-year cycle? That's like an open question. But what's really interesting is that in Courageous Blogger Society a few weeks ago, someone said, literally asked, how do you tell a story? And I was like, lady.
You're like, I know it. I've done the research.
I can tell you that. Like, that is something I know. So in Courageous Blogger Society, we do everything on the cycles of the moon. So in the previous new moon, the theme for this moon cycle has been storytelling. And we do 2 writing and coaching workshops a month. So in those workshops, I'm actually talking about like narrative structure. Like, here's a narrative structure for a way to frame a story. Like, here's another one, right? I'm talking about the heroine's journey tomorrow. Like, as opposed to the hero's journey, the heroine's journey and that narrative structure. And what makes a good story? Like, what is a story, right? And I'm like, oh, I know, like, I spent years deep diving into this and I didn't even expect it to come up in Courageous Blogger Society. And here I am, right? So it is kind of interesting, especially as a multi-passionate person myself too. And I can have this like framework. I think a membership works really well for me. This is another thing, right? I've tried so many different business models. And what I find is trying all the things, what I realize is I want to do all the things. I want my business to hold all of the things. And so for me, a membership works really, really well because I can talk to you all and my audience about one thing, Courageous Blogger Society. But within that, I'm making online courses. I'm leading, like, doing guided meditations based on the chakras. Like, I'm healing recordings are in there. Group calls are in there. Writing challenges are in there. I get to bring all of myself into it. And I think that's something that I learned over these past 7 years, maybe from trying all the things, is that, yeah, I'm not going to want to stop doing the next interesting thing on my mind, but the membership like holds it all. And so that really works for me.
It just makes my multi-passionate heart so happy.
I know, but I think it ties back to this. One, learning to mother the self too, of like, oh yeah, like I can create a structure for myself that works for me. I think that's like mothering myself, like creating a home, I guess, for myself. That brings tears to my eyes a little bit because it's like, like I'm creating a home for me and for my folks, the people who are my audience that need what I do.
Yeah. And the other piece that I was hearing that makes me think of mothering is the self-acceptance and the journey that you came through of like, I just wanted this to be my thing. And now I'm changing to being like, no, like I'm going to change. I'm going to grow. And I accept that. And also even I love that you just, you so like, you inspire me how you just own this word crone and you're excited about it. You're excited about the aging process and you're excited about the next evolution of yourself. And I don't think that is, we don't get to see that very often. And that also feels like a level of a kind of mothering or the connection to that wild mother that's like, no, like this is awesome.
Yeah.
Every phase, every stage is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm reading in the book where she's talking about the like 95 to 105 7 year stage of age of pneuma, the breath. Like I want that stage. Like that sounds interesting. Like what the heck is that about? It does like when I read this, it makes me excited for all the coming stages.
I love that. So to wrap up this stage, what's the quote that you want to share?
So there's this very short sentence that I feel packs a lot of power from this stage. And it says, there is always the next helper and the next. And so that really anchors me into, like, of course, nothing I did was alone. Like, I had my friends to talk to. Like, Caitlin, you and I were, like, brainstorming our businesses together. I was taking trainings. I was meeting people. And there always was, like, the next helper for the next part of my journey. And I think that just fills me up with hope and remembering, like, oh, yeah, there was always the next helper. Like, there was always another person there supporting me or someone else like offering a training that was like the thing I needed that I could feel my soul saying yes to. And so I think if someone's like really nervous about these 7 year stages, just remember there is always the next helper and the next.
That's comforting to me too. And what would be the reflection question that you would offer for this stage?
Yeah. So I think it would be really interesting for our listeners to consider the last complete 7 year cycle of their life based on their age, right? So 0 to 7 is one cycle. And then really ask yourself, what was my wild self learning at that time? So if we think about this stage as a stage of learning, of the baby hands to the grown hands, you could ask yourself, what was maturing? What was growing during that time? So if you look to the beginning of that 7 year period and to the end, like in what part of your life did you feel growth and maturity? What about you? Would you have a question for somebody?
Yeah. I was thinking about our part of the conversation, we're talking about impatience, and maybe because that's something that I struggle with at times. That, you know, if you're feeling some impatience come up in your process of like wanting to get there, it's to, you know, combine this with what Emma's talking about is looking at each of those 7 year cycles and thinking back to what you gained from each one of them. And if maybe during that period of time, if you also had some impatience, but how that cycle and the wisdom that you learned during that time is serving you right now. And sometimes that can really help us to kind of anchor into, okay, this is part of my process. This is necessary. Even though I want to be somewhere else right now, how do we kind of anchor into the present and embrace that is a process It's a journey, not a destination.
Nice.
All right. So I almost can't believe that we are at the seventh stage, which is the wild bride and the bridegroom. So this is the part of the story where the king has returned and he and his mother are understanding what has happened, that the devil had been changing their messages. And this is the point where the king actually learns that his wife has not been killed, that she's actually in a safe space. And so he takes on this vow that he is going to search for her and that he is not going to eat or drink until he finds her. And so he also goes through this 7-year phase and cycle of deep learning and exploration. So for me, when I think about this part of it, and when, you know, we're talking about different pieces of the psyche. So the handless maiden is part of the psyche. The king's mother is part of the psyche. The king is part of the psyche. And that the handless maiden is really representing that soul self, and the king is representing the social self. And really the point of this phase is that the social self, that the king self, that's like the top side self, is actually learning how to integrate all that the soul self has learned. What's important is that now that there's been this deep soul learning, is that this other part of ourselves, you know, is able to not act like beneath the knowing that we have gained. And if we do, it's like she talks about there's this like fracturing that can happen. So for me, where this comes up, you know, I've had times of feeling that sense of fracturing from what my soul self knows and then maybe how I'm acting out in the world, whether or not sometimes it feels like things are in my control, sometimes they feel out of control, but that fracturing never feels good. And so where this has shown up for me, you know, when I was at this point that I had done the life coach training and then I was finishing that up and I was leaving my previous job that was really, really toxic. And I was trying to figure out, you know, like what's the next most soul aligned, you know, step that I can take in my life. And I knew that I was in a space that I needed a lot of healing. And though I wanted to work on my business, I felt like I needed a little bit of support. And I wanted to find, I ended up finding a part-time position where I was able to use a lot of my skills. I was working with college students doing academic advising and I loved it. It was this beautiful sort of like supportive space while I was working on my business and what I was doing. And that felt amazing. And I remember just feeling how fortunate I was that all these pieces were fitting together really beautifully. And then after some time, there was some restructuring that happened at the college. And so what I was doing at the time that I really loved, my whole job changed and my job became something that was not soul aligned, that it wasn't, I didn't feel like it was connecting, like the piece no longer fit. And it was something that was out of my control. And I remember in that moment feeling pretty devastated when this happened because I felt like I had betrayed myself, even though this was not a decision that I had made. But I was doing something that my soul would have never chosen to do. And that was that feeling of fracturing for me. But through that experience of understanding what that feels like, it was again this resolve of like, okay, so I need to make this shift. I need to get back into a space of soul alignment. And so I had to do a lot of this work with my social self. So the king part of myself was like, okay, I need to do the work on this other part of myself to, one, come into a sense of peace in this current situation, and then work to come together and make yet another transition, another shift away from that. And then to be, you know, full time in my business. That it's like became clear that was what I needed. And even as, you know, scary as it is to be a fully self-employed solopreneur, that is where I feel like these two parts of myself, you know, finally were able to fully come together after this time of feeling that fracture.
So if we think about that metaphor of the hands that we've been talking about, this like maturity and growth, what it makes me think of is like over the course of you working at the college, doing that like topside world job, like your soul self was learning and growing and maturing. And it almost sounds like this is all the right time. Kind of like what I was just talking about too, where like now stepping into this new work of having your business be your job, your soul, like work that you're doing in the world. It sounds like it's that merging of like you had been doing so much work underneath. So now it's like time, you're ready. Like you have the foundation of soul connection and all of that to keep going. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was, you know, working on it the whole time. It was always there. And I think that sometimes, like in ways where the devil was kind of coming up, was almost like because I was doing this other work in addition, that I was discrediting everything else that I'm doing. Like, right. You know, it just was this weird. So that was also kind of an interesting part that was at play. And I needed to go on this journey. I needed to be in this space where I actually had this, I was in a safe, you know, I was in this safe space. My soul self was feeling safe because on the top side was like doing this work and was creating some stability for me and it served a purpose. And then at the point where there was that deeper knowing of like, okay, this is no longer fitting. It's not that it's like was bad. It just was no longer like the fit that I needed.
Right.
That's when it was like, okay, it's like ready to come together.
Yeah. I like that. I love the way how she describes in this section, the idea that like you're talking about, that while the soul is going through its paces and learning and growing, that there's always this mundane stuff to do, but that the regular stuff we do in our everyday life, it kind of creates like tension. She calls it tension between like what's going on with the soul and what's going on like above ground, just with our everyday practical stuff we do, and that tension can help the soul to grow. And it sounds just like your story, right? Which is why you were telling it, where like something changed in your job. It created this tension between like how your soul had grown and was like, now, oh, like this isn't a job my soul would do. So it created this tension and created like this opportunity for more soul healing and more claiming the self. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I feel like whenever that happens, it's like, dissatisfaction is always pointing to potential for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So do you have a quote from this one?
Of course. I do. I wanted to share this quote because it spoke to me on several levels, which I'll share after I read it. The Handless Maiden is a real life story about us as real women. It is not about one part of our lives, but about the phases of an entire lifetime. It teaches, in essence, that for women, the work is to wander into the forest over and over again. The thing that I really loved about this, and you know, it's interesting that it came right at the very ending, because as we were as we were preparing to record this, I was definitely having this self-conscious feeling of telling these stories in a way of like going through all these phases as if, you know, feeling like, am I in some way communicating that like I have arrived? I am this self-actualized person. I've gone through all these phases and, you know, but as soon as I read that, I was like, okay, this is what I know intuitively is that we can go through these phases and we go through them over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that is our job to continue like returning to the dark, returning to that place of, you know, of gestation, of, you know, where our ideas are like sprouting and they're vulnerable. And then we come to the topside world and then we have to deal with how do we bring it all to the surface of what we've learned. And we do it, you know, continuously. And every time we gain more knowledge and we just, our job is just to continue to align our soul self with, you know, how we show up in the world the best that we can over and over and over again.
Right.
And that's just what the work is. I mean, it's like, to me, it's like, it's, there's actually a piece to me in a way of being like, oh, I don't have to actually arrive anywhere. I'm just supposed to go like around the wheel again, you know? And that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
I love that. So what questions would you suggest folks ask themselves going through kind of this last phase and this particular turn of the wheel?
My question is, where are you feeling that tension in your life? And what needs to shift? Like, what is the deeper self knowing that needs to be brought to the surface, as in brought to like how you show up in the world? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, that's a really good one, because there really is like that tension. For me, I think I would have people ask themselves, I guess not even ask, but just let themselves know that there really can be both things going on. Like sometimes the balance can shift to being really focused on what's happening right now in my everyday, especially depending on what's happening in your life, right? And then sometimes the balance can flow into like just being so deep in the underworld and with the wild self. And I would say, you know, get comfortable with that, because that's kind of how it goes. Like the balance can really shift from one to the other. And when I'm really in the practical stuff, I can feel like, where did my soul go? I'm so disconnected right now. And that's my call to like do some of that deeper work. Or when I'm in the real depth, I can like lose track of what's going on, of like the daily things to do. And so it's, for me, it's been this like ebb and flow, going back and forth between those two things.
Mm. Yep. Embracing the feminine cycle and process.
Yeah, or like just the tidal process of life too. Like if we think about the moon and the tides and our life in that kind of ebb and flow way, I think it can be really useful, practical. So a question you might ask is where am I now? And am I feeling the call to connect more to the topside world or the underworld?
I love it.
Okay, Caitlin, we did it. We did the longest chapter.
We did. We all did it. We all got through it together.
Yes. And so now what's happening is our next two episodes are going to be the book club and life school episodes for the last two chapters of Women Who Run with the Wolves. Now that will be our next book club and life school. And then we have a fun like bonus episode after that. And then Caitlin and I will be going on a little break through September and October. And when we come back, we will be reading a new book. So this will be, for me, really exciting, because I've been studying Women Who Run with the Wolves for 4 years, right, as a book club and leading book clubs on Women Who Run with the Wolves. So I'm excited to read a new book. What about you, Caitlin?
I'm really excited. I think, you know, this has been so far like such an incredible journey. And I just know that there's still so much for us to explore out there. And so I'm excited to see the next evolution, the next cycle of this podcast with the new book.
And so we haven't chosen our new book yet. And because I was the one saying, hey, Caitlin, come read Woman Who Ran with the Wolves with me. And it ended up being this really challenging read. I've passed the baton. And so Caitlin will be picking the next book. But if you all have ideas for books you'd like us to read next, these are inspirational books like this that help you to live with a full heart and a free voice. Please do email the podcast at fullheartfreevoicepodcast@gmail.com, or you can send us a message on Instagram. We're fullheart_freevoice_podcast on Instagram, or post in our Facebook group and just let us know what book you'd like us to read next. It would be good to hear from all of you for that.
Yes, I would actually really love to have some suggestions because it feels like a big responsibility to choose our next book. And so I wouldn't mind sharing that responsibility. So yes, if I want to know, I really want to know what you all would love to read and dive deeper into. So yes, if you have ideas, please, please do share them.
And come and join our community. Let us know what you think about The Handless Maiden at Full Heart Free Voice Podcast Community on Facebook. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
This episode was produced by Emma Veritas and Caitlin Bosshart. You can find out more about me, Emma, at my website, wildauthenticity.com, where you can also download your free workbook, 3 Habits to Calm Your Fear and Get You Writing.
And you can find out more about me, Caitlin, at my website, caitlinbosshart.com, and on Instagram at caitlin_bosshart. The nicest thing that you can do for us is to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player.
To stay connected with us, join the conversation in our Facebook group, follow along with us on Instagram, and sign up for our monthly newsletter. You'll find all the links in our show notes.
A special thank you to the amazing artists whose music is featured in our podcast, Wally Ingram, Stevie Black, and Tom Freund. You heard portions of their tracks, Shine a Light, and Who Do You Love, from their record Spa Day.
And thanks to Caitlin Bosshart for creating our beautiful cover art. And thank you to Kirit Basu for all his audio and technical help.
And a huge thank you to Emma Veritas for her editing magic. Last but not least, thank you to you, our listeners.